T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All righty, third hour here on the show. What's going on, Tiki and Tierney? Ready to roll? We have been rolling. We're still ready as we set you up inside of our beautiful studios here, the Rocket Mortgage Studio. Rocket Mortgage giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. See rules. See what's going on. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. So we are plowing into the coaching stuff. We got the game stuff, obviously. First hour, spent a lot of time on everything that went down over the weekend. Midweek, we'll start to transition in terms of what we anticipate coming up this next weekend. But this gives us a chance here, Teague, to talk, you know, in general terms about the coaching carousel, what's transpired already, maybe specifically what could still happen. I'm trying to find it. That's why if I seem distracted, I just can't find it. I tweeted something over the weekend, and I mean, I can recall the gist of it. So it's not the biggest deal if I don't, but I want to try to find it. I want to read it to you because it really struck me, and I have not been able, nor have I ever written this in years past, in January during the coaching cycle. But these coaching hires, let's just give one more scan. Yeah, I'll see it. That I really feel like here it is. Okay, here it is. I tweeted this on Saturday. Based on marrying organizational needs with head coach strengths and personalities, this appears to be a really strong group. Like, that's my initial set. Like, the Jags bringing Urban Meyer seems like a home run. Mm-hmm. Rob Saleh with the Jets seems like a home run. Arthur Smith, I think it's a very good hire for the Falcons. I like Dan Campbell for Detroit. Now, I thought it was going to be Daboll with the Chargers when I tweeted this, and I put a question mark next to Daboll's name. It's not. It's Brandon Staley, the young DC for the Rams. But still, that seems very interesting. I think so far, I know the minority aspect is a big thing, and we could certainly get to that. But just in terms of what the teams brought in, I think they hired some good football people.
No, I think you're right about that, and we hit this last week. I think they're also changing their philosophies about, you know, looking at what someone does as a coach, meaning what his acumen is as a coach, and more of how good he potentially is going to be as a leader, because that's ultimately what it comes down to. I think the best coaches have been that. You know, Mike Tomlin is an example, was a great defensive mind, but he evolved and ultimately showed pretty early that he was a really good leader, and ambiguous as well. You know, the same thing could be said Belichick in his early days. I mean, he wasn't that great of a coach, but very quickly, once he got to New England, that is, mm-hmm. he turned into a great leader. And that's what you need. It's not about, you know, how well you can design a play and you know, or a game plan. It's about can you inspire guys and make them better and at least make them feel like they're getting better each and every weekend. And if you can't do that, then you're going to fail. It just is what it is. If they don't trust you, or they don't believe the things that you're saying to them, it's going to be a fight. And I think when you look at some of the teams that got rid of their coaches, and the one in particular that pops out is Doug Peterson, mm-hmm. I think it got to the point where his team they couldn't believe him, right? They didn't believe that he was had their best interests in real time at heart. It was more he was looking for the future. And that's that you can't keep people like that. And that's that ultimately is one of the biggest challenges of head coaches. It's like, how do you keep it real with them, but also keep it real?
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. That's a very tough line to straddle. Back in the day, it was a little bit easier because fear ruled or discipline ruled or, you know, it was just a different dynamic. I get that. So the let me pose a question to you, because now the reports over the weekend that Deshaun Watson's going from a 2 to a 10 in terms of anger. And there was a
That's not a report. That's him. He said
What am I saying? That's right. That was his tweet. That's true. There was a rally that was staged. I don't know if it's actually gone down in Houston that was in support of Deshaun Watson. And Deshaun actually put out a tweet pleading for people due to the spike in COVID cases not to assemble.
Yeah, it was interesting.
You know, I appreciate the support. I respect what you guys are trying to do. But please don't congregate. It's not worth it. Let me ask you. Yeah, that is very interesting. I agree. If I'm the Texans right now, because the Eagles don't look as if they're going to hire the enemy. If I'm the Texans, who, as we know, waited until after the bye week to put in the request for Eric, so now they can't talk to him until after the season, which is either after this Sunday, maybe Sunday night, they lose, or obviously before the Super Bowl, right? So they've got time, and it's not the good kind. But if you're able to ever get Deshaun Watson to answer his phone, because apparently Deshaun Watson's not even responding to the Texans, would you consider, and I have to preface it with this, if you don't, internally, the Texans, if the Texans do not view Bieniemy as a top target, meaning other guys that are still available, they like more, but they communicate to Watson, and Watson either intimates or they flat out straight up ask him, hey, if we bring in Eric, does this change our relationship dynamic? And if you trust Watson, and if Watson says yes, do you hire Bieniemy?
Yeah, I would. Because it's gotten to the point where, so not only is this affecting this team and how the players on this team are thinking about the organization, because that's a big deal. It's not just, you know, one or two guys who are making a lot of money thinking, you know, this organization is doing Deshaun Watson wrong, and they've got rid of his best weapons, and yada yada yada, et cetera, et cetera. This is going back a couple of years, and you know, you look at Andre Johnson talking about this, and some other former players talking about
Arian
this.
Foster.
Yeah, Arian Foster talking about this. It's like, man, there's like an institutional incompetence that we're dealing with, and I don't. And yeah, I know I'm getting paid because I'm an employee here, but I don't have any faith here, and if that takes over that team, like how do you consistently win? I just don't. I've said this many times, BT, and it really, I unfortunately have to use your team as the example.
Okay.
Like, it starts at the top, right? It starts at the organization, organizational top. That's the owner, and then it gets into the player personnel and the general manager. Like, if those guys don't have, I don't know, the respect of the league, which I don't think the Texans do right now, or, and especially the locker room, it gets really hard to win. And I think right now, they got to figure out a way to stabilize it, talking about in Houston. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just interviewing Eric Bieniemy maybe brings you a little bit closer to that. But if it gets to the point where you're about to lose your quarterback, and then other free agents are going to defect, and other, you know, guys that may want to think about Houston as a free agent destination, they're going to say no if they have other options. It creates this. Look, we saw this in Jacksonville. It creates this like void that's impossible to fill. You know, the NFLPA last year, 2 years ago, whenever it was, recommended free agents not go to Jacksonville. You know what I mean? Think about what that does to a team. And so Houston's in danger of falling into that category as well because of how ownership has handled everything going forward.
I don't know how. I know it's not easy to own a team. First of all, it's never easy to get to the lofty perch of affluence to be able to actually own a team.
That's a good point.
Number one. Well, you know, provided you actually get there, and some people do, obviously, because people own teams. Like, I don't understand, how is it so hard? I'm not going to say that it's easy to win, because that I know it's not, but it should be somewhat easy to be professional and to have a certain checkpoint or various checkpoints and a proper decorum in which you operate. And it seems like that's very elusive for the Texans. Why is that so hard for certain teams?
Because I don't get know.
It.
Ego.
Seems like it's basic stuff.
Well, it's ego with BT. I think it's apparently a group of people who think they know better. And the reality is, in 2021, really, this has been going on for a couple of years now, athletes, especially the high-paid stars, have voices, not just, you know, outside of the, you know, we're talking about obviously the social issues and everything else that goes on, charities that they raise money for. Those voices are one thing, but they have voices within their organizations. And you've seen this over and over and over again. It's becoming more and more prevalent. And maybe in Houston, they don't espouse that. They don't believe that. And as a result, they're behind the curve. You know, and Deshaun Watson, who, let's face it, he's had years wasted. It is what it is. He's had years wasted because he's been elite, and they haven't put the right kind of players around him and made decisions that were just asinine. I understand that you need to sign a left guard or a left tackle, whatever, whichever one you side you decided to sign. But getting rid of one of the best wide receivers in football to do that doesn't make any sense. And you know, now you pull that forward, and we hear these reports about Deshaun Watson saying, you know, interview Eric Bieniemy, because I'm very intrigued by him. I think he's had unbelievable success, obviously, because he's a Super Bowl champion and a coordinator under one of the best head coaches in football right now. He also recommend they interview Rob Saleh, and they didn't do that either. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I don't know. I feel like there's an ego and a I know best mentality going on in Houston that's ruining what it felt like for a while was trending to be one of the better organizations in football.
Yeah.
And then now it's kind of fallen off the cliff, and I don't know how they climb back up it.
They allowed Bill O'Brien to have too much power.
Yeah.
And he made some sloppy trades, and it's been spiraling out of control ever since.
Yeah. I mean, really? At least they recognized that immediately. And I mean, that's the one positive, is that they gave Bill O'Brien too much power. And then they said, all right, yeah, we screwed up. Let's get rid of you.
Yeah.
But then I don't know. I mean, it's almost impossible. You pay a guy, whatever Deshaun Watson's deal was, $100-something million, whatever it is. You pay a guy, and then not even a year later, he hates you, right? That's almost impossible to do. Think about that. Mm-hmm. And so that's where they find themselves, and I don't know how they get out of it.
Especially, and you know, not to necessarily, you know, bring Kyrie Irving into this, you know, but I'm not trying to, you know, pile on Kyrie, but Deshaun Watson is very predictable in his personality.
No doubt.
Like,
he's the anti-Kyrie.
That's kind of what I'm going for. It's not like you give somebody money and then, like the Nets did, and all of a sudden, you know, he's still not there. It looks like he's going to be on the court maybe this weekend. He's starting to amp up his, you know, his cardio. He's got to get himself back in shape. So that's going to probably resolve itself soon. You know, and Harden was great the other night. Triple-double. We hit that before, an inbounds, out of bounds. But you still don't know where Kyrie's head is at. And he's really been somewhat erratic in terms of that, and enigmatic probably more, because there's not, I don't want, you know, when you talk about Kyrie, it's, you say erratic, it's not like criminal erratic, and it's not even close to that. He is really a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
You just wonder, does he want to still play basketball? And he, some of his actions over the years have made you question, you know, you never have a good read on Kyrie Irving. And that has never been the case with Deshaun Watson. So to your, I say all this because when you get all that money and the guy that got the money is as stable a personality as there is in the NFL, there's been no fluctuations, no coloring outside the lines. He's just a good, relatively quiet, great playing professional.
Yeah.
And I think he's disgusted.
It's interesting because a lot of this started with the hiring of Caserio to be the general manager.
Yep.
And look, I've never met Nick Caserio. I have no idea who he is, what he's like, how he talks to guys. I have no idea. But it almost feels like Deshaun Watson had a bad experience with him somehow. I don't know how, because he wasn't there. Or maybe he had a bad experience. I'm forgetting the guy's name. That hired Caserio. I can't remember now. Easterby. Maybe he had a bad experience with Easterby. And as a result, like, he doesn't trust any of these moves. And so now he's making assumptions, and that's not always a good thing, but clearly he's unhappy, and he's forcing their hand, which I think is great for Deshaun Watson. Because why would you, if you're Deshaun Watson and you're looking at this team right now and you're saying, I'm one of the best. He's not going to say this personally, but he's going to say, I'm one of the best in the game. There is nothing around me. We have incompetently mismanaged the front office and the head coaching situation to the point where I don't have faith that we're going to win. Why am I going to spend the rest of my career being a bottom feeder? And it's hard to argue with that. You know what I mean? In today's NFL, guys have power to request to be elsewhere. And right now, that's what's going to happen. I mean, they have to move him. I think every team is calling them, and they should, at least except for the ones that are set at quarterback. Mm-hmm. I think everyone that has even a little bit of a question mark, they're having conversations with the Houston Texans, and the Texans might have to pull the trigger here.
I think they have to. And a matter of fact, I think it's as much as I love Watson as a player, I think for number one, even if you say if you don't pull the trigger, even if it's harmonious for a moment, like say if they smooth this over now, mm-hmm. there's no telling. I mean, this thing looks like when it's this bad, the next little flare up, because there's no trust.
That's right.
You know, when there's trust, little flare ups don't become big things. They get snuffed out because I trust you and you trust me that our hearts and our intentions will eventually meet because we're all striving for the same thing. Usually when there's a fundamental breakdown in relationships and threats because I don't trust you and or you don't trust me, and that's almost never completely rectified. It's always kind of languishing and lingering over a situation. So if they don't trade him, I mean, you know, now you lower the ability to ask for, even though he's still a great player and he's in his prime, but you know what? Now teams know that you absolutely have to move. At least now there's like a modicum of thought, well, maybe they don't have to move.
Yeah,
them. But if there's another flare up, then you know that you have to. All the other teams know that, and they just give up less.
And by the way, that's going to be dictated by who they hire as head coach. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I mean, I hate to say you're giving Deshaun Watson this power because I come from an era where that just didn't exist. You mm-hmm. just didn't even contemplate it. And Peyton Manning was not involved. He was the best player of my generation, quarterback of my generation. He wasn't involved in who was going to be this head coach or offensive coordinator or whatever it may have been.
Not even 10 years in?
Not even. I don't think so, BT. I really don't.
Not even in Denver?
No, I definitely not. Okay. you think he voluntarily said, I want Adam Gase to be my guy?
I think he really liked Gase. They had a great relationship. He might have.
Maybe because Gase was learning from him more than the other way around.
Maybe, but I think that he wanted to lie. I mean, I know he was a big proponent of Gase. I don't know exactly the dynamics behind the contracts and stuff, but that's why I ask, you know, maybe at the end with Denver, maybe at the end with the Colts. But point well taken. Different generation, different distribution of power.
But if you're going to tell the guy you're giving him that kind of influence, you can't lie to him about it. And that's what it seems like happened.
So it's the bridge is burned. And let me ask you, let's leave it on this here. All right. Is four first-round picks too much?
It feels like it is. But, I mean,
see, can I insert this?
That feels like a lot.
It is, unless you're a team with multiple ones, and a few teams have that. Number one, that's one thing to consider. The other thing, too, is I would be much more inclined to, okay, you know what? We'll make the trade. We need three ones. Now, they're going to ask for four or five, but in terms of consummating the deal, three ones and a young quarterback who's still on his first contract, and that would include Tua. So if Miami wants to give me three first rounds and Tua, I make the deal. If the Jets want to give me three first rounds and Darnold, I don't know if they'll do the deal.
Yeah.
From the Jets' point of view, I would. And if I'm running the Texans, I probably would as well. I don't know how many – like, you're not going to do that with Trubisky. You're not going to do that with – there's not many people that apply to. Let me ask you this. Is there any chance that the Jaguars would actually trade for Deshaun Watson – and Trevor Lawrence winds up in Houston?
No, I don't
see
that happen. I don't see that happen.
Well, why?
Because the Jaguars aren't ready to be that team yet.
Why not?
Because I don't think they have the talent. I mean, if I'm Urban Meyer, I want to build the team as I see fit. That means there's going to be a lot of attrition on that team, meaning some of these, you know, borderline, you know, free agents or third or fourth round, they're not going to be there next year. I mean, obviously they got to fill the team, but I think there's going to be a lot of turnover on the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Okay, let's throw it at you. You never know. I don't think so either. But, I mean, listen, it's going to be a crazy offseason, so I'll throw every scenario at you.
Yeah, plus he has a 7-year contract, so, or whatever it is, 6 years, whatever number.
I hear you. All right, T, let's get to this coming up next year. So we all love talking about the slinging quarterbacks and the stats, but further evidence, if you want to be knocking on the door of the Super Bowl, you better have a running attack to support that great quarterback play. We'll get to that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. On this Martin Luther King Day Monday, third Monday in January. Hopefully everybody's taking time out to explain, to talk about this. you know, with young kids. Tiki and I were talking about this before. We got a four-year-old and my little guy just turned six. We put on a nine-minute video earlier today. They came back. My son came back with some stuff about Dr. King from school and wanted to see how much they were really, you know, getting into his legacy. And, at, you know, at the age of six, it's not going to be a ton, understandably. So I wanted to fortify that. And we sat down, we watched, and there were a lot of good questions that were coming, Teak. That's what you want. It's one thing to speak and to see your young kids look at you attentively, mm-hmm. but when they ask the questions,
yeah.
that's the money time right there.
Yeah, the best thing you can do is raise naturally curious children.
That's right, man.
Because that means they'll be asking questions and never accept the bad answers.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. What if they start asking Daddy? Daddy doesn't know the answers. That's going to happen pretty soon,
well,
I'm
that's
sure.
That's good. That's good.
Hey. You know what he asked me the other day? Real quick, we're coming back from the batting cage, right? And like an indoor facility, just T and I, we rented out a tunnel again. I think I mentioned I did that the week before too. We did it again this Saturday, and we're driving back, and there was a deer, not in a threatening position to actually hit our car because we were mm-hmm. going real slow. But there was a deer, and you know, I'm a firm believer. Actually, I read this in a book when Jen was pregnant, and I would have never really thought about it in these terms, but it's very interesting to think about. And one of the chapters was about the, you know, the importance to stress, you know, the fundamental value of life to little kids, which seems obvious, clearly. But an example that I would have never thought of is like when I was little, come on, who didn't smash ants or, you know, mm-hmm. you don't even think about it, right?
Right.
But when, you know, one of the chapters was, you know, hey, listen, if you can impress upon a young child, boy or girl, that, you know, the ant represents human life, then you start to build into the empathetic qualities, blah, 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 right? So we were, he's always said, both kids have always had a fascination with animals. And there's some families of deer that kind of just stroll through our neighborhood, right? And we're coming back from the cage, and there was a deer that was in the road. And you know, I just let it go. And we were talking, nice. He said, where's he going? I said, he's probably going. He's getting food for mommy and the kids, you know. You know, you're free, right? And we start talking. And then he said, he's like, because, you know, he stopped because he didn't want to get hit by a car. No, he said, deer are really friendly. Because he was just making the point that deer are friendly, and he's right. I mean, deer aren't going to hurt you unless you charge them, and they still probably won't charge you back unless they have to. And then he made the connection that deer have brains, and they were able to basically process why they like us and why they're not afraid of us. Blah blah blah. So it's going on and on. Then he asked me, and we were talking about various snakes. I'm like, various animals. I'm like, yeah, when Daddy did Man versus Bear on the Discovery Channel, bears have brains. And I was just extending the conversation. He asked me, he's like, do snakes have brains? And I'm saying to myself, damn, they have to have brains, right?
Of course they do.
Well, no, they do. They do. But I was driving, and I was going to get Starburst for him and Kinsley because they were going to watch a movie that night, and I was pulling into the gas station. I said, let me Google that just to make sure. And if you say, of course they do, but the way Google explains it, it's brain functionality, but not necessarily in the way that you think that a brain would actually be. Yeah, exactly. This is why you look it up. So yeah. I didn't really know. I thought I knew the answer. I said, I'm pretty sure, buddy, but I'm going to check on that and make sure they do have brains. They do have brains.
Ask Google.
I did. Listen, teams with brains, make sure that quarterbacks have running backs.
Yes.
Because quarterbacks without running backs are quarterbacks who are dropping back 45 times a week, and those are the guys who get dinged up and get hurt and eventually have years come off their career. It's no accident that the players left standing at this point have some form of running attack, some more than others. But it's not the sexiest thing, but Teak, the running game is coming back.
No, it
coming
is.
Coming back.
Look, and we talked about this a lot because of Derrick Henry and the Tennessee Titans. Now, they're not here because ultimately their defense was extraordinarily flawed. And then offensively, once Ryan Tannehill made a couple of – he just started getting predictable, let's say, with his downfield throws. It was easier to defend this team. You load up the box, you take away his one receiver in A.J. Brown, and for whatever reason, Corey Davis didn't play at the end of that Ravens game. But we started talking about this because of the Tennessee Titans. But then you open your eyes and you really look at other teams that have been successful. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have a good running game, and there's no superstar right? There's no guy who's rushing for 1,800 yards, but Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette, they're forces to deal with. You know what I mean? And the same thing could be said about Aaron Jones with the Packers, and obviously in Kansas City, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, when he's healthy, and then Le'Veon Bell in his stead, and Williams, this other kid that played last weekend. Like you have to have it, mainly because it gives you offensive versatility, not just as a runner, but just as a receiver. It's a new mismatch that you can throw out against defenses that don't want to substitute and put a smaller player on the field. You're going to put a linebacker on the field and cover one of my skill position guys? Good luck. We're winning. In fact, we saw that with Tom Brady against the Saints. That last touchdown was to Leonard Fournette running a sloppy.
Yeah, how about that?
Dude, it was a sloppy angle route.
Yeah, it was.
That play is supposed to be, you know, three steps, put my foot in the ground, cut across the defender's face. The ball's going to hit me in the chest, and I'm going to score a touchdown. He like ran up to the defender, like pushed him off of him, and then bobbled it into the end zone. So yeah, if you can have a good run game and a versatile running back, I mean, it helps you so much more, and you're seeing the best teams, they have that.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Bills are going to have to build this out a little bit, though.
Yeah, you know, that worries me about the Bills right now, by the way.
That's the thing, you know, because, yeah, it's misleading, because you have to pick through the stats here, because, you know, anybody who watches the Bills knows that Josh Allen, you know, whether it's 5, 6, 7 times a week, is going to tuck it and run.
Yep.
And he's going to usually gain a lot of yards, but you know, when you run, what do they carry the ball? Roughly 13, I don't know, 7, I mean, I'll check actually. I'm going to say about 13 times, 16.
Yeah.
They had 16 carries this past weekend, but Josh Allen had 7 of them.
That's right.
I mean, that's so, you know, Devin Singletary had 7, TJ Yeldon had the 2, and Josh Allen had 7. And this is like one of the rare games where Allen really didn't get much done on the ground production-wise, yeah, but he still ran it 7 times.
But it's misleading, is
it's
what you're
misleading.
Saying.
Yes, you say, well, yes, they have elements of running, but not the elements of running that protect the quarterback, which is what we're actually talking about in the segment.
Yeah, no, you look at the Bills, and you look at their run offense, and you're like, man, they're actually pretty good. They're like one of those teams that scares you with their run game. But then you go look at that's what you think. And you go look at the stats, and you're like, wait, they're like middle of the road. You know, they're actually bottom of the road. But what about Josh Allen? But Josh Allen does it surprisingly. There is no game planning that gives you excessive runability in Buffalo. And that really worries me this weekend, BT. It's the one negative on this offense, because they're number 2 scoring offense, number 2 total offense.
Yep.
But so much of it is predicated on one player being elite, and that's Josh Allen, who's only figured that out this year.
I hear you. So it's certainly something to watch. And then you see Tom Brady. You know, it's amazing, because if Brady was selfish, I mean, this guy would be calling pass all the time. I got to pad my stats.
Yeah.
He gets them out of pass and into run so frequently and so selflessly.
Yep.
And to the benefit of the team, it's amazing. And that's something that, listen, you're not going to lead the NFL in times audible incorrectly.
No.
But if there was a stat for that, or at least an acknowledgement of a stat for that, then people would really realize, and I think most people know this, but Tom Brady and not just Brady, but the great quarterback, Rodgers, does it too. Hey, you know what? They're giving us this. Yeah, probably have a little more fun dropping back and flinging it 20 yards downfield, but because we're here to win, I'm going to actually stick it in the belly to the guy behind me,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. He threw for under 200 yards, BT, and he had a rushing touchdown, which was obviously the sneak at the end. But, I mean, you don't have to be elite number wise quarterbacking to win in the NFL.
It's true.
You don't have to.
That's true. Teak, let's get the update. Axe on top of that. We'll come back. We'll hit you with the blast. Busy Monday show. Rich Ackerman's update right now. Here's Axe. Right, Teak and Tierney putting the finishing touches on a great Monday show. Hopefully everybody's doing well. Had an awesome weekend. And we just hit the button. We start anew. Right back into the forest, and we try to find our way out of it through another week here, which we will. And right now, it's time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day, Teak, brought to you by our friends at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Today's question coming in from the great city, hardworking city of Cleveland, the state of Ohio. Oliver wants to know, are you guys more convinced now that Baker Mayfield can be a Super Bowl caliber franchise quarterback?
To me, this is all about what they do defensively. So my answer is no.
Mm.
Baker's really good.
Uh-huh.
Not a Hall of Famer. I'm sticking to that. The statistics tell me
that I
have to.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I got you.
75% of Super Bowl winning quarterbacks are Hall of Famers, unless there's an elite defense on the other side.
But, you know, it's funny. When you brought that up before, and I hear you, and most of those names are layups, but how many guys that were, and I'm just asking, I'm not even sure of the answer, but how many guys that, you know, may have been, you know, 50-50, straddling the fence, the reason why they got in the Hall of Fame is because they won the Super Bowl?
Well, Bart Starr.
Okay.
Joe Namath, maybe, but he was.
Oh, Joe Namath doesn't win the Super Bowl. Joe Namath is not in the Hall of Fame.
Joe Namath's
stats were terrible.
But this is a different era. This is the 60s. So
he threw 50 more picks than touchdowns.
But yeah, so did, what's his name for the Chargers?
Dan Fouts?
Dan Fouts.
Yeah, early on he did,
it was
sure.
Just a different evaluation of quarterbacks.
Okay.
But you go to the modern era. Let's go to the 90s.
Yeah.
So it's Aikman.
The Aikmans.
Aikman, Young.
The Youngs.
Favre, Elway, mm-hmm. Kurt Warner. And then you hit the Tom Brady's of the world and Ben Roethlisberger's, Eli and Peyton Manning, who are not in, but eventually will be. Mm-hmm. The one outlier after the 80s,
Brad
Johnson. Not Hall of Famer, I mean after the 90s, is Trent Dilfer,
yeah.
Brad Johnson,
mm-hmm.
and Nick Foles. But he was the Super Bowl MVP. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it just tells you, like, history's telling you, you better be like one of the best MVP quality or Hall of Fame quality quarterback in order to win a Super Bowl. Period.
Yeah, no, I'm not even.
I don't
that.
Love that because I don't want to believe that narrative.
The numbers are what they are. It's a lot of numbers, a lot of names.
It just is what it is. Yeah,
I think it's encompassing a lot of years. I think it's interesting. I'm just trying to give a little bit of a different perspective. And by the way, you know, the way it's framed by Oliver, the question, a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. And my answer to that will be, yeah, he needs certain things, you know, unlike in Elway, the absolute greatest all-timers, the athletes, the guys who could do whatever they want, and Elway's on that list. You know, maybe you could be a little deficient in other areas, and he could will you to an appearance or two. Those Bills teams were great, actually. That's a bad one. But the point is that I can see Baker getting to a Super Bowl. I absolutely can.
Yeah.
I could see him being the quarterback on a team that walks off the field, winning the NFC Championship game. They could have won this week.
Yeah, true. Oh. True.
We'll see. But he is one of those quarterbacks that needs a lot around him to be buttoned up. I hear you on that for sure. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs. Guarantee low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
Off the head trivia, BT.
Ooh,
we know that Tom Brady is the leader in the clubhouse because he's still playing with six Super Bowl championships. Terry Bradshaw and Joe Montana are next with four.
Four, correct.
Who's third?
In terms of three championships?
Yeah, who has three? Who's next on the list?
Bart Starr's got to be there.
No, he's only got two.
Wait, who has three?
Yeah, who has three? Because it's Tom
two.
Brady,
yeah.
Joe Montana, and Terry Bradshaw.
But they have four.
They have four.
Brady's got the six, and they
six,
have the four.
And they have four. Who has the three? There's one player with three.
Okay, hold on. I'll just don't.
It's obvious, but you're just not thinking about it.
It's obvious?
Yeah.
It's obvious.
Yes. You listen to him every weekend.
I listen to him every weekend?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Wait a second. I mean, it's not. I'm thinking of guys on seat. It's not Sims. He's got the one.
Nope.
He didn't even play the other one, but he was terrific.
He's on Fox.
He's on Fox.
He's their lead analyst.
There you go. Aikman.
Aikman. Three.
I'm thinking studios.
Yeah.
For some reason, my mind was in the studio. I'm like, no, Gonzalez, no. You know, and then I'm thinking, Hours to Cower, no. Nate Burleson, no. I'm just going through every studio.
I kind of forgot that Bob Greasy, he went to three. And one, two. Bob Greasy has two world championships. He's obviously a Hall of Famer as well.
Greasy,
yeah.
Huh?
He's one of those guys you just don't think about with the Miami Dolphins.
Saw him play.
That's right. But he was in three consecutive Super Bowls, 6, 7, and 8. He won 7 and 8.
Yeah. I mean, wow, Super Bowl 7, and we're getting ready for 55.
I know. It's unreal, man.
Wow. No, but to your point, Greasy is a name that gets
lost.
Obscured.
It
gets overlooked. Not even obscured. It just gets ignored, actually.
Yes, that's right.
And it's weird because his son's an analyst.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not like they're not a football family. Weird. I don't know if I read this part. If I did, I'll read it again. They've been with us for years. Who cares? Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
That's
now,
not
I
bad.
Think I think I did do it twice, but that's okay.
It's all good. It's my bad. I got you distracted.
That's okay. Hey, listen, that's all good. You ready for the blast? See what we got here?
Let's do it.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
Sean McVay says Jared Goff, like every other position, is going to have to compete for a starting job next year. Now, Goff is 42-20 in his four years as a starter. Are we convinced of Goff being a legitimate franchise quarterback? Go for it.
Franchise quarterback is a heavy word. I'm using that word specifically. Is he viable and can he get you to a Super Bowl? Of course, because he already did get you to a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But is he going to be that guy who takes it on his shoulders and, you know, leads you on whatever drive to, you know, win a? I don't see that right now. He got there when he had an elite run game. Obviously, Todd Gurley was the running back, but they had an elite offensive line. They were fantastic in their play calling. I think he's the kind of quarterback that needs help. I don't know how that changes, because I think we've seen his ceiling. I mean, it's harsh to say that because he's still young, but that's what I believe.
Teak, I agree with you. I believe the same thing. I mean, how many times, even when Josh Allen was really scuffling as a rookie, there were snapshots where you're like, I said it last week. I mean, he could throw it through a barn.
Mm-hmm.
He could scrape the clouds if he has to. He can run over you. I mean, you just saw this natural, borderline transcendent physical toolbox. And with Jared Goff, you know, he's very slight of frame. He doesn't have a rocket. You know, he's got a good arm, but his thing is accuracy, getting the ball out fast and being smart, which he is. But he's not overly athletic at all. He's not, you know, quite as slow as like a young Brady. He's a little quicker than that. He could do more stuff with the rollouts, et cetera. But he is not he's not great at anything except maybe mentally.
Yeah.
And maybe accuracy.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and that's not a bad thing to have, but that doesn't necessarily let you lead teams to Super Bowl wins. Not that you can't get there, he has, but I'm with you. I agree. The Niners have officially promoted run game coordinator Mike McDaniel to OC, since we stole their other one. Although it is believed that Kyle Shanahan will still call the majority of the plays, should the Niners have gone outside the organization for their OC hire? My answer would be, not if you believe you have the right answer internally. Why would you?
Yeah, look, they're run first right now, right?
They're run first right now. There's good continuity. You would imagine that, listen, somebody like Shanahan, who's been around the game forever since the time he was born because of his pops, is not going to hand the baton to somebody he doesn't trust, he's not in sync with philosophically, personality-wise. That is not an elevation just to avoid looking to go through the process and because you're lazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's an elevation because a great football mind says, this guy's going to help.
Let's also not forget, BT, that the primary play caller is Kyle Shanahan.
It's still Shanahan.
Exactly.
That's
so what are you doing? You know, it's like you're helping, you're bringing in someone to help you go through what you already know you're going to do. Like, it's not dissimilar to Andy Reid with his former assistants. That's Matt Nagy, that's Doug Peterson, both of whom became head coaches, one of whom won a Super Bowl. And right now, currently, with Eric Bieniemy, you know, he's the offensive coordinator, but most of the play calling is done by Andy Reid, and it's no different with Kyle Shanahan.
All right, so despite 30-plus from Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray last night, the Nuggets fell to the Jazz. And now 6-7 on the season. What's the problem in Denver?
That is the world's greatest question with Denver. Part of it is it's who they're playing, but I think, I don't know. I can't get over, BT, the hangover from the quick turnaround. I think we're going to see this for probably a month of the season. Certain guys just need rest, and especially, you know, as aggressively as they played in that restart and in the postseason,
mm-hmm.
I can't get over it. This is just an odd season. So I'm forgiving what I'm seeing in a lot of cases, like from the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, how the hell are the Dallas Mavericks as inept as they look sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
We know that they're great, but they lose games. You know, they lost to the Chicago Bulls, you know, football team. So I can't get past that. So I think that's what it is, to be honest with you.
I don't think they're very far away. First of all, Michael Porter's missed 9 or 10 games. So right away, he hasn't even played for a while. So right off the bat, it's like, okay, you're missing somebody that we all expected would immediately elevate or at least continue what he showed at the end of last season. That's been missing. They played 13 games. He's missed 10 of them. That's number one. Number two, they've lost a lot of tight games. I mean, they lost by 3 points to Phoenix. They lost in overtime to the Kings opening night by 2 points there. They lost by, you know, a couple of points at Brooklyn recently. They lost to Utah in the game we just referenced by 4 points. Utah's a good team. Listen, you want to, as a fan, you want to know, all right, my team's going to win a lot of games, and they're what I think that they'll be. But not every line is linear. I believe at the end of the season that the Nuggets, if they're whole and healthy, Nuggets will be a handful.
Yeah, and by the way, at 6-7, they're like 4 games out of the 4 seed.
Yeah, exactly.
Not even 3 games.
No, 3. It is 3. Yep. Not a big deal. Number 4. Now, if it's a month from now, which I don't think it will be, then, you know, maybe we circle back and kick the tires. Kemba Walker made his season debut yesterday in a blowout loss to my Knicks. Blew him out. Knicks won by 30. Mm. However, Jason Tatum didn't play. We'll take it. Who cares? And they won again today. They beat the Magic. Has Boston become too reliant on Tatum? Too reliant? Well, I don't think, and I don't know that the usage rate necessarily supports that they're using him too much. Listen, he's their best player, and he's their best offensive player, and he's their go-to guy. And I think if you look at every situation across the NBA landscape, you would find maybe when there's an imbalance, it's a little bit easier to guard. And, you know, when that player's not there, it's just very easy to defend. And even when he is there, the other team kind of knows what's coming because he's the man. And he is the man. Maybe a little more diversity offensively. Guys got to get healthy. Not worry. This is what happens in the NBA.
Yeah, look, in fact, Jaylen Brown's usage rate is not that far behind. It's 31.5 to 29.5 in usage rate. And with Kemba Walker, with Jason Tatum out, Kemba Walker was 41. You know that they heavily leaned upon that. He's a couple of percentage points over what he was for the entirety of last year. So are they using him too much? I can't say that. Tatum was out, so they had to. So I don't think that they're using him too much. I think this team works so much better when Jaylen Brown, Tatum, and Kemba Walker are all kicking on all cylinders.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
You know, by the way, back to the question, we've already gotten a lot of tweets on this, and, you know, I said that Bart Starr's got more than two, but keep in mind, and I appreciate people, you know, even tweeting about this, that several were not during the Super Bowl era. Obviously, the NFL championships existed before the Super Bowl era. So
we are talking correct. Super Bowls.
Yep. Super but if you Bowl. Want to talk total titles, Bart Starr has 5.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he's the man. Saying.
Packer but fans, we hear you, brother.
The
we
first
got
Super Bowl, we're talking Super Bowls.
Understood.
It was 1966. He won both, and he was the MVP of both.
Mm-hmm. All right. And he had a run game, too. They couldn't stop that power run, remember? It's a great play from Lombardi. Teak, have a great Monday. Safe, sensible, and sane. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.